To begin, can you talk a little bit about your husband, just what he's like and what your relationship is like and what your life is like together?
Yeah, it's always hard to describe my husband because I don't want to forget anything and I don't want to leave out anything. My husband's the most sensitive person. He's got a great sense of humor. He doesn't like confrontation, a very soft-spoken person. He's actually quite naive and never defends himself for a lot of things. So I think for that trial, that might be a serious issue. He's not the type that defends himself. He's not the type of person that believes in any violence whatsoever and stuff like that. He's just got a big heart. He's just a good guy who just wants a normal life in general. So not all positive things to say about my husband only. So.
And he was working a couple different jobs.
Yeah, he was actually like an assistant manager in two different stations, one in Petro-Canada, the other one on Mr. Gas, you know. He was working two stations off and on and also delivering pizza at night to make up for the some of the money because he was only working for $6 or $7 an hour. So, of course, that's not enough to live.
Mm-hmm. On December 10th, he was picked up by...
Immigration.
Okay.
Immigration. I'm not really sure if immigration mixed with CSIS, mixed with RCMP. It's hard to tell because I've never given any detail, specific detail on who really picked up my husband. I know there were 8 agents or more and 5 cars in total, and he was handcuffed, and it was a big, big deal. They screamed, you know, you're under arrest, and they handcuffed him right away, and they made sure that it really looked like it was a serious takedown, like they had the biggest guy in Canada.
And this was all in your...
I was all that was beside my house. Actually, he was actually taking out the garbage, and he had his work shirt under his arm, so he was heading to his Petro-Canada shift. So, yeah, about 2 in the afternoon.
Did you have any signs before this happened that there was any interest in your husband?
Not that there was specific interest. We knew CSIS was following us. My lawyer told us it was a normal thing for a refugee to be followed just to see what their actions were like, stuff like that. But I always wondered why it took... much longer for him when all of his friends had their, most of them had their citizenship or had their landed status. So there was something fishy from the start, but I just thought, you know, it's just another case lost in the pile that they have. So I never really made a big deal out of it. I never in my mind ever thought this was going to happen. I don't think I would have ever got married if I knew that something like that would happen. I'm saying that meaning that... if I knew he was a bad guy, I would have never married him. So when I married him for all the right reasons. And I knew that if I ever came across this problem, of course, I had to go all the way for that. So never in my mind did I have any doubts. Never after this happened, I sat down and started thinking, is there anything I would have seen? Is there any phone number that was suspicious on his phone bill? Because, of course, I sorted all the bills and all that and the phone bills and all that. So never in my mind did I... have a doubt, and I still don't, and I will never have.
He was accepted as a convention refugee
yeah.
in Canada
mm-hmm.
yeah, in 1997.
Yeah. He came to Canada in 1995 from Algeria.
Do you know anything about his claim, you know, about what he had suffered in Algeria that led him to make that claim in Canada?
Yeah, he was part of the FIS, which is the Front Islamic, I think, Association or something like Society or something like that, which is like, to compare like the Liberal Party here in Canada or the NDP. And his house was used in the membership office, and the government didn't like that people were starting different association against the government. So at one point, the government turned around and said, we got to stop all these associations. And him being the main office for the membership, he was the first one to be searched for. So he escaped from that. His family had to move. It was a hard situation for everybody, his family, but they thought, you know, you got to go just in case they eliminate you. Most of his friends did the jail or disappeared, stuff like that. So from there, he went to Pakistan, where he worked in a refugee camp for about 5 years, from 1990 to 1995, and then took a plane from there in 1995, did a quick stop in Malaysia for about a couple of days so he could catch a plane directly from there to Canada. So that's basically his pass.
After he was accepted as a convention refugee in Canada,
mm-hmm.
then after some time he applied for his landed immigrant status.
Yeah, he had applied with the first lawyer that we had, but things weren't moving. So when we got married, I figured, you know, let's try to push this so that we could eventually buy a house and get a car, because by having a 911 insurance number, it makes it almost impossible to get any kinds of loans. Now, I work for the federal government, but I don't have this this big salary that everybody thinks, you know, and I still have student loans to pay and all that. So the financial burden would be too much for me, you know. So of course, as a couple, we want to join in and get that kind of stuff together. So that was a limitation. And then afterwards, we wanted to talk about having kids. And we just thought we'd wait to see what happened. And thankfully, we did for that reason. And also that he didn't get the full healthcare service. He needed to have an operation in his foot, but he can't have those services because healthcare won't pay for certain aspect unless it's an emergency surgery. And just the fact that he's got to renew everything every 6 months, his work visa, his driver's license, his health card, it's a big problem. So that's
so
why
those
we...
Those are all the conditions of life for people who don't have landed status in
that's
Canada.
Right. That's right.
So you were waiting for this landed status to come through.
Yeah. And unfortunately, after September the 11th, we got a visit on the Wednesday from a CSIS agent that questioned my husband. He was there for about 2 minutes asking him, is there anything you would have... Is there anybody you know? Have you seen anything? Do you know anything? What are your thoughts on the subject? And my husband was just as sad as everybody else. So I thought right there was something fishy here. Why my husband in particular? I know his case was pending, but I knew from there was something wrong. So I contacted the lawyer at the time, and he never returned my call. So I said, just no way. He's not gonna waste my time with this guy. I get to move on and make sure that this sort of thing never happens again. Now, supposedly that when a CSIS agent comes to your door, you don't need to answer any question. They're not police officers. But just if you don't do the research, then you don't know that information. So my husband just answered this question, and I said, you know, you're in Canada here, and you don't need to answer to somebody else like that. So we moved on right away and got another lawyer. And same thing, we just continued with the immigration procedure to move on to the landed status, and then one day I got the call. One day I got the call in the afternoon that it was urgent to call my lawyer back, and my heart started beating right away because my lawyer normally doesn't call me unless something came in or a fax or something important that he needs to discuss with me. So I knew that when you use the word urgent that there was something wrong. So I was in my office, and I'm sharing an office with five other women, so they basically heard me screaming, you know, being completely hysterical and using all the words, colorful words imaginable. I couldn't believe the situation. So
was your husband politically active in Canada? Like,
nope, never. And he never made comments when he watched the news. He was a big fan of the CNN, and he watched news constantly. So he liked to get himself informed. But never made a comment. Even after September 11th, I never heard a comment from him. He was actually sad that those events happened. So there's actually someone who someone from CSIS portrayed himself as my cousin. Followed one of Mo's friends to this farm where he goes and buys meat because he owns a meat shop downtown. So he went there a few times and they spoke, but the Mo's friend thought he just owned the business himself and just went there to buy his meat also. And then one day he starts asking questions. He said, you know, I'm a cousin of Sophie, and I've heard that she's married this guy, and we're concerned that he might be a threat and he might be dangerous and stuff like that. So we got a phone call from his friend saying, why are these people asking all these questions about you? And Mo hadn't told a lot of his friends that his process was taking a long time, because most of them had their papers within 6 months to 2 years. So, you know, my husband also questioned himself, what the hell did I do wrong? What the hell is it taking so long for? Like, why me? You know, and every time he would call, Sissy would be so depressed to find out that he's not getting another answer. So, you know, that was a big shock to him, you know, that he never imagined that. And we had discussed that before we actually got married. He said, you know, maybe we should wait because I still don't have my papers and I don't want you to get involved. And I said, you know, what the hell, you know, we'll just do it and then we'll see what happens. And then, God, you know, I didn't know I was going to be that involved. So, yeah.
Can you tell our listeners a little bit about how you felt when he was first taken in and what your first reactions were?
My reaction was that this is the most ridiculous thing ever. I mean, I've been with him not that long, but long enough to say that he is not capable of all this. And I know where he is every minute of the day and all that. And we communicate phone each other 10 times a day, and there's never been anything suspicious. So I just never thought something like this could happen. So right away I thought, this is just ridiculous. And it took me a couple of days to take in the news, but my mind never changed. The minute I got into that lawyer's office, my mind was made up. We had to do something about it, and I never looked back on my decision. From there, we just moved on from there. I had pretty much discussed with him before, too, if something ever happened, that I would have been there for him. But he always said, well, maybe if something really big happens. I said, don't worry about it. Things that big don't happen. So, because we had compared to some other people that were going through this situation, you hear it on the news that people get deported all the time. You know, I kept saying, don't worry, we'll never reach that. We'll never get to that. And there you go. We're in that same position.
What are some of the steps that you've taken to be engaged and have a voice on this case?
Well, I think first of all, coming out was the number one thing. Saying to the media out there, I'm there to support my husband. That was my number one step. I had to come out and say something about it. I can't stay home and do nothing about it because I have nothing to hide, and I trust my husband 100%, and I do believe him all the way. So first of all, coming out was the number one thing, and then meeting up with some different organization, talking to Amnesty International, people that follow the case, DACO from Ottawa, Matthew here from Homes Not Bomb in Toronto. I'm really glad I got to meet all these people, because these are the folks that connect me to the rest of the folks that are involved into that. So I can say that from this experience in particular, this has been the most positive thing that has happened. All the friendship that I've made and all the people that I've made that have helped me through this. And then we've organized a few things, like we've organized a big march rally in 2 days before the disclosure hearing, so that we could get some media coverage. And I'm also planning this event on April the 26th, 2 days before the trial, just to get some... here again, some support and some media coverage again, because I think if it's not out there in the media, people won't know about the story. So I try to get, if I can get an interview, I always say yes. I never say no to an interview opportunity. I'm a bit more selective. I've learned my lesson, but I want to make sure the message is out there. So every opportunity I get to talk with someone, I do it.
Has CSIS ever talked to you?
CSIS has never questioned me, has never visited my apartment. They've been keeping their distance, let's just say. But I think now that they're following me more now, I'm saying that, like Matthew said in our meeting tonight, that he saw someone that looked suspicious at the train station where I arrived on Thursday. And I'm sure he's right. And at the disclosure hearing, there was two suspicious people sitting behind our group, and I knew everybody in our group except for these two people. And funny things, like we've put up posters and 10 minutes later they're all gone. I think they're really, really following my actions. They really are. And I think they're realizing, shit, I think we caught the wrong person. Yeah, I think they're realizing that they're not going to mess around with me, and it's important that they know that. Yeah.
How do you feel when you know that you're being followed, when you know that they were observing you over some time before even probably this arrest?
It's a bit upsetting to think that some of your personal things might have been seen or heard. That really bothers me a bit. How far did they have to go to get some of that evidence? That really bothers me. How far did they have to go, and how my family's been touched by that also? It's private manners, what happens in your own house. So that bothers me. But now that they're following me now, or that they're following me anywhere, really, I don't give a damn, because I've got nothing to say. I'm really not that interesting, obviously, if they didn't want to interview me when this whole thing happened. I'm supposedly the wife of the biggest terrorist in Canada, and even the murderer's wife would get questioned in court. So, I'm the biggest case right now in Canada. Makes you wonder, why don't they take the time to question me if I've seen anything? I could be the number one witness to all this.
With that in mind, do you have any idea about their motivations in this whole thing? What do you think that they're after?
I think they're just trying to please the Americans and please the people here and say, here in Canada, we're able to get some terrorists. We're able to point the finger in and
get some terrorists too here.
I think people were just... It's a government is trying to prove that they're doing their job. And unfortunately, I think my husband was pointing the finger at because he's naive. He doesn't speak well English. I mean, he was a very easy target. Very easy target. He's got no family in Canada, you know. So he was definitely an easy target. And if you compare some of the cases that are similar to my husband, it's pretty much the same thing. You know, they're very similar.
What is he accused of? Do you know?
Well,
how much do you know?
Yeah, what I know is that maybe he has been or is or will be linked to terrorist activities. So that's really broad in terms of accusation. I have to say that he's been in jail since December the 10th without any charge. It's important to say that usually when somebody arrests someone, they usually are arrested with a charge. Even the prisoners inside the detention center know that this guy doesn't belong there because these guys are there and they have charges. My husband gets more respect out of the prisoners now than from CSIS or from people from the government. You know, people that are in jail, they might have done something wrong, but they know why they're there for. You know, they know that they're not stupid, the people that are in jail. They know why they're there for. And they know the legal system very well. And when they see my husband, they say, "What are you doing in here? You know, you're supposed to be here with a charge." And that's the funny thing, you know. Prisoners know more about the legal system right now than most government people.
How about yourself? You must have learned an awful lot in the last
few months. Yeah, I've learned a lot, and I think I will make a change of career eventually. I never thought I would get involved in all these activities and all these groups. It really changed my perspective on things. I never thought I'd go to a war rally, really, before this whole thing happened. But now I feel like all this is a downfall of September 11th. So it's really important for me to participate to all these things. I can't participate to everything that's being organized, but I wish I could be more out there. And I think people will understand that I need to concentrate more specifically on my husband's case. And I've made the best friendship through this and met great people. So really, this is the most positive thing that's come out of all this.
Is there anything else that you'd like to say?
Well, in general, I just want to tell people if they want to... I'm not asking people to take a position. I'm only asking people to tell the government that the procedures used in this case, it goes against human rights. And to follow up on the other cases also, it's the same thing. It goes against all human rights. Because he's a refugee, he doesn't have all these rights. Me as a Canadian, I should have at least have the right to know why my husband is being arrested. You would think that at least as a Canadian, I would be allowed to know. Put me in a room by myself if I need to and give me those secret evidence to myself and tell me, you know, we've got the pictures, we've got this, you know, please tell me. Nobody deserves to go through this process. Animals and dog pounds get treated better than most people here now. And you can see even in jail, if I compare also how people are being treated in jail, comparable to animals and dog pounds, the animal shelter would win an award, seriously. So I want people to tell the government that this is not okay, because this is a precedent for what might be happening in the future and what has been happening that's been kept secret. So the silence has to end. We need to tell the people, listen, you know, one day you're just suntanning outside and you might be arrested because of your race or your religion. It's as simple as that. So we need to get the message out there. Write to your MPs. Write to Denis Coderre. Write to Wayne Easter and tell them, you know, you've done a mistake. You've done a huge mistake. You know, we don't want to repeat that ever again. I wouldn't want anybody to ever live this situation ever again. But we all know it's probably going to happen if people don't react to this.